That investigation from the Columbia School of Journalism that found serious failures in the November Rolling Stone article about claims of a campus rape at the University of Virginia. The article in question, called A Rape on Campus, detailed the claims of a young woman of a brutal gang rape at a fraternity party and the lack of response from the school. That story propelled a national debate, including on this program, about how well colleges handle allegations of sexual assault. Rolling Stone has since retracted the story. Yesterday, the reporter apologized. NPR's media critic David Folkenflik has been following this. And David, what jumped out at you from Columbia's report?
Well, it was a signal of failing from top to bottom of Rolling Stone's editorial process, from the reporter to her lead editor to the fact checkers to the overall managing editor, Will Dana of Rolling Stone. The report laid out in stark detail how many failures, not only of omission, but of commission were involved. And I think what was really telling was the degree to which the writer, Sabrina Rubin Erdely, and her editorial colleagues decided not to contact people who could have verified or disputed key elements of the victim's tale. The victim identified only his name as Jackie, of having been raped at a fraternity party at the University of Virginia. And in fact, had they taken the effort to contact the people who were said to be Jackie's confidants, they might have found a very different version of effects. In fact, it turned out that the magazine had failed to provide even enough information to the fraternity to dispute the occurrence of the event. It turned out that there was no party at the fraternity at the night in question.
Well, it was pretty stunning to see that the three friends in particular that were quoted in the Rolling Stone article were not talked to independently. So we're assuming those quotes had to have come from, again, Jackie, the name of the alleged victim. I mean, explain to listeners what is supposed to happen. I mean, when we talk about how they weren't independently contacted.
What you're supposed to do is verify in multiple directions, in multiple ways, from multiple, as many sources and resources as you can think of, what occurred and why, and to be clear with readers what you know, what you don't know, and how you know those things. And the failure on both of those levels, I think, is pretty severe. I spoke with Will Dana, the managing editor of Rolling Stone, in recent days in anticipation of the release of this rather damning report. And I asked him about not only the failures to contact those friends, but the failures to be transparent with readers about that fact. And he said, well, the transparency issue is really a second or third order lapse compared to the other lapses. But I think it's almost on an equal stage for two reasons. One, you have to keep faith with readers. Two, in a sense, I think it's really important, is that it might forestall stupid decisions. The very act of writing on a screen or on a piece of paper, a choice that you made that doesn't bear up to scrutiny, might tell you to say, you know what, I'm going to stop right there. We're going to go back and revisit this and see how comfortable we feel about this decision after all.
What you're saying is that's why people often hear the phrase, all efforts to contact fill in the blank were unsuccessful, or we tried to reach that person and it was unsuccessful. I mean, that's what you're talking about, that transparency, letting people know that you did try to reach somebody.
It's very clear from reading the report and also from my interviews with the deans that Sabrina Erdely wanted to confirm more, and she, you know, sought ways to push Jackie to give her more information to confirm things. By the same token, the overwhelming decision, and it was a cognitive decision, to have complete faith in Jackie meant that when Jackie shied away, pulled back, resisted, and even seemingly lost her composure, really showed emotional fragility over the idea of the magazine contacting her friends, contacting the man that she said had alleged her, even fully identifying that person in their own minds to be able to contact him. They said, fine, we've got to go with Jackie. We've got to honor her. We've got to protect her. And in that moment, in that choice, they fatefully undermined everything that would follow.
Well, meanwhile, we remember other things from the report. For instance, a woman who'd graduated from the school who told a story of how a young man came forward 20 years after she was sexually assaulted and apologized as part of a program that he was in. And you know, that seemed a very verifiable story. But does this report condemning Rolling Stone throw all of that out with it?
I don't think so. I mean, fundamentally, rape is a real question. It's a real issue. I think there are real issues about how victims and accusers are treated, about how seriously campuses deal with these things, how they handle them administratively rather than referring them perhaps to criminal law enforcement authorities. I think there are also issues about due process for those who are accused, and the community is said to, and fraternities, other organizations said to harbor people who commit those things. But what you can't do is assert these things and present it as a narrative in a cinematic fashion and seemingly present that as almost fact. I think one of the ways in which you can tell the reporter's own bent clouded her judgment fatally in this, it was that Sabrina Erdely's apology last night, you know, went to her editors and colleagues, went to her readers, went to the University of Virginia, but notably didn't single out the fraternity itself. And I thought that was a very stingy, parsimonious apology, because the fraternity in some ways was most seemingly damaged reputationally for an event for which there is no proof it took place. Not to say something didn't happen to the woman identified as Jackie, but that event, seemingly there's no proof to support that it took place.
David Fogenflik, one last question. Do you think that all involved, editors and reporters, should be fired? And how much is this damaged Rolling Stone?
I think it's a real hit to Rolling Stone. I think major news organizations, you know, of many stripes, the New York Times, CBS, you know, any and all that you name, have black eyes from time to time. It's not impossible to imagine mistakes made. It is notable that there are no punishments involved. Jan Wenner told the New York Times, he's the publisher and controlling owner of Rolling Stone, that he does not intend anyone to lose their jobs. Will Dana, whom I interviewed, the managing editor, said he didn't think that, you know, the processes needed to change much, just that their standards needed to be clearer and more explicit. I think that's raised a lot of objections, not just eyebrows, but outright objections among journalists who say, you know, there's no accountability with jobs, but also seemingly the idea that Rolling Stone just happened to make a series of fatally consequential decisions, but that there are no problems with the procedures or the way in which editorial judgments are usually made, that seems misplaced as well.
NPR's media critic David Fogenflik. David, thanks as always.
You bet.